Outline in front of you was written in May 2016. Anybody know anything that's significant about May 2016? It was before I got married. Yeah. I made it back then, and I intentionally sat on it for 3.5 years for a purpose. I didn't know exactly when I was going to preach it, but I was going to wait a while anyway. And I haven't changed anything in it. I didn't, except for a couple typos, but I didn't make any, I intentionally did not make one single change, didn't amend anything to it. And I wanted to do that for a purpose. I've mentioned this before, but sometimes, and I'm not saying that any of you think this, but people naturally, especially when their toes are being stepped on, when somebody's telling them something that they ought to do or not do, and that person isn't in their situation, then they say, oh, you know, easy for you to say, you don't know what it's like to be me. If you were me, if you were in my situation, if you'd been doing this, if you'd whatever, then you would know, but you don't know what you're talking about because you're not here. That would mean, number one, that I could never preach to a woman for the rest of my life because I'm not a woman, obviously. And anybody that's older than me, I could never preach to them either because I haven't had the life experience they have. So let's see, is there anybody? Austin, I'd have a church of one. I'd have a church of one.
No, because you don't have a child yet.
Oh, I don't have kids. So actually, I would have, yeah, that's right, I don't have any kids yet. So I would have nobody to preach to. Isn't that something? So anyway, thankfully I do have a Bible which tells me a thing or two about life, and I can learn some things about it even if I haven't experienced it all yet. So anyway, that's one of the reasons why I sat on it for so long, just to show you that you can know things about topics that you don't have personal experience with. If you, you know, if you just study your Bible and read what the Bible has to say about it, and then learn from other people that have been there and watch how they do things, you can learn a lot of stuff without actually having experienced it yourself. And there are actually times, and maybe you won't agree with this, maybe you will, but I've experienced this, where sometimes somebody from the outside that is not experiencing something that somebody else is actually can see more clearly and give them better advice than they can themselves when they're going through it, because their emotions are clouding their vision, right? And they can't see it. And everybody around them can see it, but they can't see it. So sometimes it's actually best to talk to somebody maybe that isn't going through what you want, isn't going through it or hasn't been through it, because if they've been through it too, then they know how you feel, and then maybe they're less likely to tell you what you really need to hear because, oh, I know how badly that hurts. You know, could be, maybe not. Sometimes the best advice you get for somebody is somebody that's been through it themselves, and they can explain it to you as well. So anyway, that's just a couple of preliminary thoughts there. I guess I haven't even told you what the sermon's on yet. The sermon is titled His Needs, Her Needs, and it is another sermon on marriage. This would be the third series that I've done on marriage, and going at it from different angles over the last, 6 years or so. And I guess all of these outlines were put together before I was married, so you're hearing it from a guy that had no experience at the time that he wrote the outline, so we'll see if it's any value to you, but I think it will be. So this outline is largely based on a man named Willard Harley's book called His Needs, Her Needs. I read that one back in early 2016, and thought it was very good. And so I kind of just distilled that book down into this sermon. It's probably going to be either two or three sermons. I'm not sure. It depends on how far along I get on it today. But the interesting thing is that everything that the points that he makes here are all biblical. So it's not psychobabble or anything like that. You're going to see as we go through these points, every single one of them, I'm going to start out showing you that the Bible teaches this. And then I'm just going to give you some of his observations, some of my observations concerning these things. And I hope there's a lot of good, practical, helpful things in here for all of us. Because probably the person I think that needs to hear this sermon the most in this church is the guy that's preaching it. I need to hear it is just as much or more than any of the rest of you do. So in order to have a successful and a happy marriage, husbands and wives need to meet each other's needs. And this is very important because husbands and wives have needs. They have wants and desires too, but they actually have needs. And those things must be met. And it's important to recognize each other's needs. And that point, I don't think, can be overemphasized. Because if you don't understand what your spouse's needs are, you're obviously not going to be able to fulfill those needs. And then what can happen is if you don't fulfill them, somebody else comes along that will or that can. And that's when trouble really happens. This sermon should be supplemental to the other sermons that I've done. So if you haven't heard them, then I would recommend going back and listening to them. I did one, I think it was just called Marriage. It was three sermons. That was way back in 2013, just shortly after I was ordained and took the ministry. And then the other one was done 2016, shortly after I got married, called The Five Love Languages, based on another book that I had read. And the one on marriage, the first one, that really covers the biblical, it was just, you know, total Bible, pretty much, and what the Bible says about headship and submission and love and respect and honoring and all the things that the Bible tells us that we're supposed to do as husbands and wives. So I'd recommend that one first. It was done 6 years ago, and the content was good. I can't say that the delivery was the best, maybe, and I'd probably listen to it and cringe and be irritated at how I said things or whatever. But anyway, if you can get through all that, the information was good in it, I'm pretty sure. And then the Five Love Languages, the first part of that one, I covered what I covered in the first three sermons on marriage, all condensed down into one. So that kind of gives the biblical position in part number one. Then part number two, I actually went through the Five Love Languages. So this one should be supplemental to that. This would not be a sermon that I would give somebody as the biblical sermon on marriage, because there's a lot of stuff that's not even talked about in here. So this is good to add on to the end, but wouldn't be good just all by itself. Harley has a thing in his book he calls the love bank. And he uses this term to refer to an emotional bank account, quote unquote, that husbands and wives have with each other. And when we do an act of love, then we deposit currency into our spouse's bank account, love bank account, love bank, as he calls it. And if we neglect to do an act of love or we do something that's hurtful, then we debit out of that bank account, if you will. Now, this bank account would be kind of like where a bank was just a storage house before you had fractional reserve banking. So there is no, this bank can't borrow money from anybody else, so it can't get currency from the Fed. So if you don't put currency in it, it's going to be empty. And if you withdraw all the currency out of it, there's nobody to bail you out, right? So I don't know if that made any sense to you. But anyway, just a little analogy with banking. This one is the only currency in that bank is the one that you put in it. And if you take it all out, it's gone. There's nobody else going to be able to loan you money or bail it out. So this study is going to teach us how to maintain the deposits in our husbands or wives' love bank and keep a good balance. Because if you go bankrupt, you know, it's pretty bad in life. If you go bankrupt in your marriage, it's pretty bad in marriage, too. It's not going to turn out very well for you. So men and women have different emotional and physical needs in marriage. And these needs are very real. They're not, and I don't call them, you know, his desires, her desires, right? It's his needs, her needs. One thing before I get into what the needs are, you should know that all husbands and all wives are not going to have all of these needs to the extent that maybe some other people do, right? So I think all husbands and wives are going to have these needs to some extent, but some are going to be more heavy on one than the other. The order of them isn't going to match up with everybody, certainly. So in some of these things, you may see a woman's needs, and you may be thinking, that's weird, because I feel like I kind of need that too. And that's okay. There'd be certain things that could be true of both. But generally, these needs are pretty different, and we'll talk about them here. And the Bible affirms all these needs, so we're going to see as we go through this that every one of these is biblical. So women's primary needs are affection, conversation, honesty and openness, that's this one together, those two together, financial support, and family commitment. So those are women's five needs, wives' five needs that they have. We may get through all of them today. We may only get through three of them today. It just depends on how long it takes me to get there. Then we have men's primary needs, and they are sexual fulfillment, recreational companionship, an attractive wife, domestic support, and admiration. Okay, so you see there, men's needs are different than women's needs, right? They don't have the same needs. And I think the problem is, and why marriage is hard, is because as a man, you know what your needs are. So you think that that's what your wife's needs should be, and she thinks vice versa, and it goes that way with the love languages too. Everybody has a different love language, and you assume that your wife has the same love language you do, and you try to speak that language to her, and she doesn't understand that language, and it doesn't help her. You know, if your wife's love language is words of affirmation and yours is physical touch, whenever you've said something to hurt her feelings and then you're trying to make it right, you're like, oh, it's okay, and you rub her arm or her leg or something like that, and like that doesn't help, right? Because I need words of affirmation, I need quality time, or I need acts of service or gifts or whatever your need is, or whatever your language is. So anyway, you have to understand that your spouse's needs are going to be different than your needs, and then learn how to meet them. And when I say you, I mean we. I'm talking to myself as much as anybody else. So when any of these needs are not being met by one's husband or wife, then he or she is susceptible to becoming attracted to another man or woman who is meeting those needs, and that's when adultery can be the outcome. And that's one thing that's kind of the focus of his book, is he goes through each of the needs and explains them, and then he usually, as I remember, this has been 3.5 years ago, but he tells a story then, and I don't know if these stories are true or not. They could be, because he's a marriage counselor and he's dealt with hundreds and thousands of couples. But he tells a story about how the wife or the husband wasn't meeting the needs, and then the wife or the husband meets somebody else, whether they're at work or they're, you know, in some social setting or whatever, and before you know it, though, that person starts to meet those needs, and then she or he falls in love with that person. And of course, we want to avoid that at all costs. That's a heinous thing. It does take two to tango with adultery. You realize that whenever somebody's spouse commits adultery against them, chances are they were not meeting their spouse's needs for love. Because I can't think of an example of a husband or a wife that was meeting all of the spouse's needs for love, and then the spouse went off and committed adultery. I would virtually say that never happens. I could be wrong, but I don't think, why would you? If you're perfectly happy and all your needs are being met, why would you go looking for somebody else? You wouldn't, I don't think. So anyway, this is why this is really important for all of us. So let's get to the needs. We'll start with the women's first. So this part of the sermon is really for the men, because the women know what their needs are, chances are. The men don't always know what the wives' needs are, and they need to learn. We need to learn. So the first need that we're going to look at here is affection. Like I said, all of these needs are biblical, and this one is too. The Bible teaches that men are supposed to show affection to their wives. Look at the passage that we just read here at the outset of the series of the service today, Ephesians chapter 5, verses 25 and 28. The Bible here is telling us in different wording, but when we look at the definitions, we'll see that the Bible is telling us that men need to show their wives affection. Ephesians 5 and verse 25. It says, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." And then verse 28, "So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself." So husbands are supposed to love their wives. Now, if we define what love is, we're going to see that the Bible is telling us that husbands ought to be showing affection to their wives. Love is defined as, if it's primarily with personal object, which is husbands love your wives, there's a personal object there, or one capable of personification, is to bear love to entertain a great affection or regard for, to hold dear. So there you have it, right there in the primary definition. Husbands love your wives. In other words, husbands entertain a great affection for your wife. Affection is good disposition towards, goodwill, kind feeling, fondness, loving attachment. So men ought to have a good disposition towards their wives. They ought to be kind to their wives. They ought to show goodwill to their wives. You don't want to be mean or fierce or grumpy or anything like that. You want to be kind to your wife because your wife needs that. Remember, men, wives and women are not men. The way that men act towards men and the way that men act towards women should be very different. We shouldn't be acting the same way towards all people. You know, like if for instance, if my brother was to, and I'm not on Facebook, but if he's on Facebook and he posted a picture of himself at the beach or something, and I wrote back and said, "Wow, you know, call the Coast Guard, you know, beached whale or whatever," and he'd think that was funny, right? That'd be funny. But if I would have said that to a sister of mine, if I had one, which I don't, that wouldn't be funny, right? Not at all. Nobody would think that was funny. That'd be very, very rude, right? So that's just an example. Men and women are totally different. And my brother and I can poke fun at you and just call each other names or just totally make fun of each other. He was when he was overseas one time, he wrote me an email and said, I was working in the garage and I saw a grease stain on the floor and it reminded me of you. I said, well, when I was watching the Discovery Channel the other day and I saw a water buffalo, it reminded me of you. You know, that's just kind of, that's what men do, right? But you wouldn't do, two women wouldn't do that. Or I wouldn't think so anyway. And a man certainly wouldn't say that to a woman if he doesn't want to be slapped or something. Look at Ephesians 5 and verse 29. Ephesians 5:29. It says, "For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth it and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church." So we don't hate our own bodies, typically. At least, I mean, you may not like the way your body looks. I don't think probably hardly any of us like the way our body looks. But yet you don't hate your body. You know why? Because you feed it, you bathe it, you perfume it. You try to make it look as nice as it can, right, given the fallen flesh that we're in. So you don't hate your own flesh, or unless you're crazy. You know, there are people that harm themselves and cut themselves and do weird things. But typically, people don't do that. They cherish it. Well, the Bible's telling you that you ought to cherish your wife like you cherish your own flesh. Cherish is to hold dear, treat with tenderness and affection, to make much of, pamper, pet, to caress, fondle, to hug, to stroke or pat endearingly. That's what it means to cherish. So wives should be caressed and fondled and hugged and that kind of thing, right? They like that kind of stuff. To be treated with tenderness and affection. There's that word again. That's what women need. They don't need, you know, they're not your work buddy, right, that you act like you would towards a man with. They're different. To caress is to treat affectionately. There's that word affection again. Or blandishingly. To touch, stroke, or pat endearingly, to fondle. That's what husbands ought to be doing for their wives. Especially if your wife's love language happens to be physical touch. Now, there's, you know, probably a 1 in 5 chance that that's the case, I suppose, because there's 5 different love languages. But if it's doubly important if that's your wife's love language. But even if it's not, women appreciate that kind of thing. And I'll get into why that is. So affection is essential for women. I'm going to quote here from Harley's book on page 32 and 33. He says, "To most women, affection symbolizes security, protection, comfort, and approval, vitally important commodities in their eyes. When a husband shows his wife affection, he sends the following messages: I'll take care of you and protect you. You are important to me, and I don't want anything to happen to you. I'm concerned about the problems you face, and I'm with you. I think you've done a good job, and I'm so proud of you." I would say pleased with you if I was going to write that myself, but anyway. A hug can say any and all of the above. Men need to understand how strongly women need these affirmations. For the typical wife, there can hardly be enough of them. So I don't think most women are going to tell you, you know what, stop smothering me with all this affection. I just don't like it, right? Now, there could be a woman that's, you know, just a little bit different out there that would say that, but I don't think most women would say that. Most women can't get enough of that kind of thing, as Harley says. Now, here are some ways to show your wife affection. Hugs, of course. Hugs go a long way, or to show anybody affection for that matter. You know, as the old saying goes, I think it's an old saying, hugs not drugs, right? That you hug your kids a lot, and chances are they're not going to end up going into drugs, more than likely, because if you hug them a lot, that means you love them a lot, and that means you care about them, right? So you should hug your kids a lot, especially when they're little. But, you know, I hug my dad, I hug my parents every time I see them. I've always hugged my parents since I can remember. Holding hands, cards and notes and flowers, that's something that I need to remember to do more often. Because you know what? Men don't think about a lot of these things. They just, at least if men are like me, I mean, I'm focused on production, I'm focused on work, I'm focused on getting things done, I'm focused on providing. And I don't sit around and, you know, spend 12 hours a day thinking, how could I make my wife feel loved today? It just doesn't really cross my mind, right? It's something you have to remind yourself to do. So cards and notes, that's good. Flowers, that always, I think most women like flowers, even though they die in a few days, but for some reason they still like them. they do, right? I'd rather have something more durable myself, you know. But anyway, you know, taking her out for dinner, opening doors like car doors or home doors, restaurant doors. That's a sign of affection and courtesy, respect. Going on walks together, back rubs, phone calls, conversations with thoughtful and loving expressions. All those things are ways to show affection. And some of them be more natural to you, some of them are easier than others. Like the phone call thing, once again, now I don't really work outside the house now, but when I'm working, it's like I'm focused, laser focused. I'm working hard and I'm not thinking about calling anybody unless I need to call somebody for work, right? So those are things that don't come that naturally to me, which, you know, should be something that I should work on. Here's another quote from Harley. He says, "From a woman's point of view, affection is the essential cement of her relationship with a man. Without it, a woman probably feels alienated from her mate. With it, she becomes tightly bonded to him while he adds units of love in his bank account." That's very true. It's something I'd recommend, and I learned this, I think, from Harley, and I don't always remember to do it, but I do from time to time, is ask my wife, "How full is your love tank?" I'll ask her that. And then, you know, if she tells you, "Oh, it's a 2, you're like, "Oh boy, I better get my act together here." And if she says it's a 10, you're like, "Put it on cruise control and forget about it for a while." Now, you shouldn't do that, right? You should keep it up. But anyway, it's a good idea. Just ask her, "How full is your love tank?" And then she'll tell you, 1 to 10. And if she says it's low, then you better do something about it. The thing is, a lot of times with men, though, the only time they think to ask that's when she's mad, right? And then when she's mad, you know it's going to be low anyway. But anyway. But if you want to feel good about yourself, think about whenever you've just done something really nice for her, then ask her, "How full is your love tank?" "Oh, 10. Oh, good, good. So for women, affection has little to do with sex. See, men, they hear affection and they think sex. With women, though, it's very different. I'm going to quote to you from Harley, just so you don't think it's just me saying this. He said here, this is on, page 34 of his book. He said, "Men must get through their heads this vital idea. Women find affection important in its own right. They love the feeling that accompanies both the bestowal and the reception of affection, but it has nothing to do with sex. Most of the affection they give and receive is not intended to be sexual. You might better compare it with the emotion they exchange with their children or pets." Right? So I think that's a really good way to think about affection. Think about the way that women feel towards their children and their pets. Or even men feel that way towards their pets. You know, if men have a dog that they love or something. Think about that, right? That's how you want to think about affection. It's not a sexual thing. Here's another quote from Harley. He says, "All of this confuses the typical male. He sees showing affection as part of sexual foreplay, and he is normally aroused in a flash. In other cases, men simply want to skip the affection business. They are aroused already." And that's true. I mean, that's how a lot of men think. They don't understand women. He continues. He says, "A man who growls, 'I'm not the affectionate type,' while reaching for his wife's body to satisfy his desires for sex is like a salesman who tries to close a deal by saying, 'I'm not the friendly type. Sign here, you turkey. I've got other appointments waiting.'" But you think about that. Now, how many deals is that salesman going to close? None. How many deals is that husband going to close? Probably not very many, right? Probably not very many. And I love his analogy because that just hits home so well. You're like, "Oh my God, of course," right? You would never get anywhere acting like that as a salesman, or you're never going to get anywhere acting like that as a husband either. Affection doesn't come naturally to a lot of men. Now, some men it does. If your primary love language is physical touch, then it probably comes natural to you. But it doesn't come natural to a lot of men. A man's wife will likely need to help him learn how to show affection. And this is something that wives can help teach their husbands. Because you know what? I'm a firm believer, if you want something, ask for it. You can't expect your spouse to read your mind. You can't expect he or she to know what it is that you want or need. So if you want something or you need something, just ask for it. What did Jesus say? "You have not because you ask not." Right? You have to explain these things to each other. So this can be done in a few different ways. Here I have some suggestions for this. a lot of times men, they just don't even think about it. They're preoccupied with producing and providing, and they're not thinking about these things. So wives have to help them out. So here's three things that wives could do. Suggesting to him that she would love to get a card or a note from him. And you think, well, it's not as important, it's not as special if I have to tell him to give it to me. But you know what? Tell him anyway. And then maybe he'll do it later after you've kind of forgotten about it, and then it'll be a surprise anyway. So tell him. You know, I wouldn't mind getting a card or a note from you sometime. Just go ahead and do it. Or reaching for his hand when you're walking in public. He may just be adult and doesn't remember that that his wife likes to have her hand held in public, so just reach for his hand and remind him, because he may not remember. Or tell him what kind of things make you feel loved. So just tell him, hey, it makes me feel loved when you do this or that, or when you say this or that, and just, you know, continually put a bug in his ear, and eventually maybe it'll get through the thick skull and he'll finally realize, right, what you need to feel loved. Now, before we were married, my wife gave me hints about what made her feel loved, such as sending her morning greetings, greeting messages, because remember, we were in different countries, so it was over Skype, or calling her by special names or asking her questions. And those things all seemed a bit silly to me, but I learned to do them anyway because that's what made her feel loved. And I'm not like Larry King's twin brother, so I'm not good at just sitting down and asking people a million questions and interviewing them. But, you know, I'm trying to learn and have been, you know, for 3.5 years now. And men should learn to give affection to their wives by making a habit of it. The thing is, if you don't make a habit of something, you're not going to do it. It'll be a one-off thing, but it's not going to be something that's continual. You really have to work on it and do it regularly. And the more you do it, the more it'll become just a natural to you. Here's another quote from Harley. He recommends, and this is good. It's kind of like the exercise thing. Tie exercise to something else that you do in your daily routine, or you know, something that tie your Bible reading to something else you do in your daily routine, to a meal or something like that. He recommends some things like that. He says, here are a few habits that go a long way toward helping you become an affectionate husband. Hug and kiss your wife every morning while you're still in bed. Now, this could work for some people. Me, at 5 o'clock, the alarm goes off, burr, 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 but it's on the other side of the room, otherwise I won't get up and I got to walk over and turn it off, right? So that doesn't work so well, right? But I usually come back and give her a hug and a kiss later anyway. Tell her that you love her while you're having breakfast together. That's something you could easily remember to do. Kiss her before you leave for work. I think every husband should do that. I do that. Call her during the day to see how she's doing. That, like I said, that one doesn't come naturally to me as much. And it just depends on your wife. Some wives would want you to call them throughout the day. Some would be like, you know what, I'm busy. I'll see you when you get home, right? Nothing that's important to me. So it just depends. You got to just learn your own wife. Bring her flowers once in a while as a surprise. Be sure to include a card that expresses your love for her. I guess we already talked about that. Gifts for special occasions like birthday, anniversary. He says they should be sentimental, not practical. Learn how to shop for a woman, he says. Now, some women like practical gifts. Some women like more sentimental type gifts. So if your wife likes practical gifts, well, then get her practical gifts. What did I get? I got her a carpet cleaner for her birthday. That's what she wanted. That's what she asked for. You know, kind of odd, but that's what she wanted. So that's what I got her. But if she's, you know, doesn't like practical stuff, then get her something else. But the gift thing to me, see, gifts aren't a big deal to me. I guess I feel special when somebody gives me a gift, but I don't have this great desire to get gifts. I don't really, so I don't think about that and think about giving gifts all that often because it's just not something that's important to me, but it's something that I need to remember. And probably so do you. After work, call her before you leave home so that she can know when to expect you. That's showing affection, but that's also just showing common courtesy and decency, right? If she's cooking and having a meal ready for you when you get home, yeah, then call her when you leave, and that way she knows when you're going to be home and to be ready for it, and that she doesn't have the food ready and it's getting cold or, you know, whatever. When you arrive home from work, give her a hug and a kiss, and here's the important one, this is a hard one, and spend a few minutes talking to her about how her day went. Right, the hug and the kiss, that part's easy, but spend time talking to her about how her day went. Now, let me tell you what, I do an absolutely horrible job at this one. Because when I come home from a meeting with a client or a prospect or something like that, the last thing on my mind is say, hey, honey, how's your morning gone so far? I got things I want to talk about. Oh, I talked to him about this, and he said this and that. It sounds like it might work out, blah, blah, blah. You know, I got a million things I want to talk about. So that's really hard to think about asking her how her day went, first of all. So remember, charity seeketh not her own, so we ought to be putting other people's needs first. So that's why I said I need to hear this as much as any of you do. Help with the dishes after dinner. Now, hey, if this is, you can do that if you want. I do that on special occasions, like if my wife is really tired, sick, depressed, something like that, then I'll do that to help her out. But I'll be honest with you, we have a traditional marriage. I don't cook, clean, or do laundry. And you may call me a chauvinist, you can call me whatever you want. We have a traditional marriage. That's my wife's job, not my job. I don't expect her to go out there and earn money for the family, and she doesn't expect me to do household chores. So anyway, but you want to do that once in a while to help her out, that's fine. And hug her and kiss her every night before you both go to sleep. That's a good idea as well. Okay, so that takes care of the first need of women, affection. Let's get to the second need, and that is conversation. The Bible also affirms this need. It teaches us that men are supposed to dwell with their wives according to knowledge. Look at 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. I'm not going to have as much Bible in this series as the other ones because, like I said, we're going to cover a biblical principle, and then I'm going to give you a whole bunch of practical application and things that you could do to put that into effect. 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, Peter says, "Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them," that is, their wives, "dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered." Okay, so he says that us husbands are supposed to dwell with our wives according to knowledge. So we should, that's telling us that we should know our wives, right? According is agreeing to or corresponding to or matching. So we ought to be dwelling with our wives in a way that facilitates us knowing them, knowing who they are and how they tick and what they need. This means that men need to communicate with their wives by conversation, right? Because how else do you really get to know somebody? You can watch them and see how they live and what they do, and you can learn limited things by being around somebody, but you're really going to get to know what's inside them by conversation, when they tell you and reveal the thoughts of their heart. That's really the only way you're going to really deeply get to know somebody. So, of course, Peter is telling us here in a roundabout way, husbands, talk to your wives. That's what he's telling us. Dwell with them according to knowledge. A good marriage should be a friendship. I'm a firm believer in that. And if your marriage is, if your wife or your husband is your best friend, then you're probably going to have a good marriage, right? Should be a friendship. Look at Proverbs 18:24. We're going to learn a little something here about what you have to do if you want to maintain a friendship. And this would go, of course, with your wife, but this would go with friendship in general. Proverbs 18 and verse 24. It says, "A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother." And that's sad, but that is the world that we live in. There are a lot of times when friends are closer to you than family are, right? Now, I've got a brother that's also a dear, close friend to me. I love my brother, and that's a real blessing, but I know a lot of people that don't share that, and that's sad. It's really too bad. But anyway, a man that hath friends must show himself friendly. So if you want to have friends, you have to be friendly. You can't expect to have a bunch of friends if you're not friendly, right? So you have to be exerting effort to maintain friendships, and it's a give and take thing. Unless, of course, you're reading a non-inspired version, the NIV, and then it says, "A man that hath friends comes to ruin." So, you know, I think that's just a little bit different. I don't think it's exactly saying the same thing. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, or a man that hath friends comes to ruin. I don't think that's saying the same thing. But you know, these proponents of these modern Bible versions, aren't they always telling us that, oh, they all say the same thing? You know, it's just easier to understand language. That's what they tell us. So anyway, you got to be friendly if you want to have friends. And of course, then, being friendly means you have to get to know somebody through conversation. And that's the point that I'm getting at here with your wives. Now, this is going to come to a big shock to everybody, and you're probably not even going to believe this, but you're just going to have to accept it on faith. But women have a propensity to talk a lot, and this has a potential to get them into trouble. So I know that probably nobody believes this, that women like to talk a lot, but it is actually a scientific fact. I think I've shared this with you before, but remember the study that I talked about, I learned about a while back with they were examining little mice, and they found that the female mice had some kind of a chemical in their brain that they linked to having a need to talk a lot, and they noticed that when the mice that had the higher chemical in their brain, they would squeal and peep a lot more or whatever, and the female mice tended to do it more than the male mice, and they found that the same thing is true in humans. And I think I probably told you the story, but I was learned about this newfound scientific study that I found so interesting and that I knew would, of course, irritate some of my female friends and when I was in Cincinnati. So I walked into the house one day and said, hey, I just learned about this new study. And I started going on and on about it. And one of the women started yapping about, oh, that can't be true, blah, 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 blah. And I said, see, this is case in point. The study is true. Look at this. Who's doing all the talking right now? So anyway, but yes, women like to talk a lot. They statistically use like thousands more words per day than men do. That's what I've read anyway. So they have a lot of talking. They need to get it out. But if it's not done in the correct way, then that can cause trouble, because talking is fine, but when you're talking to people that you should not talk to, or, you know, something like that, like we're going to read about here, that could be a problem. Titus, or 1 Timothy 5 and verse 13, here's what can happen. This is what can happen. This is Paul's concern, where in those days you had a lot more younger widows than we do today. Today, it's a fairly rare thing to have a young widow. It can happen, of course it does, but in those days, you know, people died. Not everybody died young, and the average age was not 35, like those liars like to tell you, and I don't know why. Those statistics are all, they're bunk. That's not true at all. All they do is average infant mortality in with the rest of the population, and you have a bunch of babies that die when they're born, and then you take the average, and that brings the average down to 40 or something, and that's not the way to find out what lifespan was. People have always lived into their 70s and 80s. Just go look back, look at a lot of these old writers, and you'll see the ages that they lived, or old, you know, people in hundreds of years ago, and they lived in 70s and 80s, right? That people have always lived that long. The Bible says that 3,000 years ago, the days of man are 70, and if by reason of strength, it'd be 80. So anyway, but in those days, you did, you know, if a man caught a bad infection, you're dead, right? You just die, right? And I'm sure a lot of us would have died young. Wayne, you would have probably died young. You told me about that horrible blood infection you had one time or something. You'd probably died, right? And there's lots of us that have probably died. Ben, you would have died, obviously, young. And younger, and a lot of people probably would. So anyway, in those days, I don't want to belabor this point, but in those days you had a lot more younger widows than you have today. And here was what Paul had to say about that. He said in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 13, "And withal they learned to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not." So that was the problem. If you had widows, and especially if they had an inheritance and they didn't really have to worry about trying to provide for themselves, and they just ended up running around and doing a lot of gossiping and talking and getting themselves into trouble. And here is Paul's remedy for this. Verse 14, "I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully." So they're not going to be out running about and causing trouble if they're married and have children, they're taking care of the house and all that kind of thing. So that's what Paul's instruction was for that. So without ample opportunity, though, to wander around and chat about, A wife needs to be able to talk to her husband to get it out of her system. Remember, she's got like 15, I think it's 15,000 words or 20,000 words, something like that, every day, and they've got to come out or she's just going to explode. It's going to be like a volcano one day. The pressure's going to build and it's just going to be, bah! She's got to tell you something. So anyway, you got to let the words come out. So you got to talk to your wives. Now, some women don't like to talk as much and some men like to talk a lot, right? So that if your husband likes to talk a lot, I guess you got to ask him questions and let him get it out too. So it's therefore important that a husband set aside time for quality conversation with his wife and ask her how her day went, ask her what she's doing or what, and ask her, you know, if she tells you something happened, then here's the one. She'll love this. How did that make you feel, honey? And then the floodgates open up, right? They love to tell you how they feel, right? And that's not typically what men, you know, this guy did something really irritated me at work. Well, how'd that make you feel? I don't know, mad? You know, like, I don't have a lot to say about that. Anyway, women have a deep need to talk. Here's what Harley had to say, page 59. He said, men do not seem to have as great a need for conversation with their wives as women do with their husbands. Women, on the other hand, seem to enjoy conversation for its own sake. Many women will spend hours with each other on the telephone, while men rarely call each other just to chat and be brought up to date. That's pretty well true, I think. Meetings and luncheons and other gatherings where the entire purpose seems to be talking about their personal concerns bring women much pleasure. When men gather in conclaves, they tend to talk about practical matters like fixing their cars, the best place to fish, or who holds first place in that sport of the sport of the season. They also like to exchange jokes and anecdotes. They tend to not talk about themselves or their feelings. And that's probably true for the most part. You know, there are some men that are more sentimental, some men that do like talking about feelings and, you know, life and that kind of thing, but a lot of men like talking about, you know, man type things, and they don't like to go deep with people. I like to do both myself, but that's not for everybody. Harley continues here on page 60. He says, this indicates that conversation that satisfies a woman's need must focus on the events of her day, people she may have encountered, and most of all, how she feels about them. She wants verbal attention, but she willingly gives the same attention to her husband and shows some conversation and enjoys some conversation in which the man talks only about himself and what he has done. Most important, a woman wants to be with someone who, in her perception, cares deeply about her and for her. That's why it's important to try to give your wife your focused attention. And when she's talking to you about something, even if it's something you're not all that interested in, try to focus, try and ask questions, because if you're asking questions, that means you're paying attention. Repeat back to her what she says. That's good conversational method right there. Because sometimes, you know, your mind is on other things and you're not really focusing on things that aren't all that important or interesting to you. But it's important to take the time to listen to your wife. Like I said, I'm talking to myself just as much as anybody else. When she perceives this kind of caring, she feels close to the person with whom she talks. In the female psyche, conversation blends with affection to help the woman feel united with the other person. She feels bonded to that person as long as the affection and conversation continue on a daily basis. Now, it takes time to communicate, and here's what Harley says. Now, this probably seems a bit steep to you, and you might think that this is almost impossible, but this is what he recommends, and I think if you can get there, if we can get there, I think this would be great. He recommends that husbands give their wives 15 hours per week of undivided attention. You think, 15 hours, that's a lot of time, right? That's about 2 hours a day, right? 7 days a week. Now, of course, you got to remember Saturdays and Sundays, you have a lot more time. You can do things together, so you can make up for lost time on those days. And, you know, so maybe you could, you know, do an hour a day of focused attention on the weekdays or something, and then get more on the weekends or something, or an hour and a half a day on the weekdays or something. But this does not mean that you, and I'll talk about what he means by focused attention, this doesn't mean this is where you just sit down on a chair looking at each other and you say, okay, this is our hour to spend quality time together, it doesn't have to be exactly like that either. It can be in conjunction with other activities if they meet the qualifications for quality time and conversation. This seems to be a lot, but just think about this. How much time did you spend talking to your wife when you were dating? Think about that, right? I'll bet you didn't have any trouble finding 15 hours per week to spend with your wife when you were dating. Most people probably didn't, right? They wanted any excuse they could get to spend time with their wife when they were, with their girlfriend, fiance, whatever, when they were dating. So if that's what it took to get her to fall in love with you, then that's probably what it's going to take to keep her to stay in love with you, right? This is what happens to a lot of people, men and women. They put on their best behavior when they're dating, right? And they're wonderful people, and they don't show the real them, right, a lot of times, and you don't really get to know them very well. And then when they get married, then the real them comes out, and then they slack off, and they don't spend the time, and they don't spend the conversation, and they don't meet the needs, and so on. And that's, you know, that's what you call bait and switch. That's not right. It's not right to put on a good show until you get somebody and then slack off. We shouldn't be doing that. That's not right. That's not fair. So why would you want to stop this after the wedding? So any activity where the couple can focus primarily on each other, such as meals where children are not a distraction, or walks, or going to a restaurant, golfing, things of that nature, that would qualify towards the 15 hours of undivided attention. You know, going to a movie or something, I don't think that would really qualify as undivided attention because you're focused on the movie. Sitting there watching TV together, I don't consider quality time or focused attention at all because you're focusing on the TV, right? You are together, but just being together and spending quality time are not the same thing. Now, you don't want to do the old bait and switch like I just mentioned here when it comes to communicating with your wife. I'll give you a couple of few quotes here from Harley, page 62 of his book. He says, during courtship, women fall in love as a result of the time they spend exchanging conversation and affection. If a couple continues to engage in the activities that brought them together in the first place, their marriage will tend to be a good one. When two people get married, each partner has a right to expect the same loving care and attention that prevailed during courtship to continue after the wedding. And you do. I mean, you would come to expect that. You would assume that the person you're dating is going to be the person that you're married to, right? And this is important too. And I know this is probably a sensitive topic, but there's other ones more sensitive. I'm not going to get into that. But this would be a sensitive one. A wife's appearance and her weight, right? If a husband dated a woman and she looked a certain way when they dated, right, then you expect her to maintain some form of that after they're married. Now, I realize it's hard. Women get older, they start to gain weight, and they're not going to look. None of us are going to look like we did when we were in our 20s, right? So you can't, of course, expect that. But it's also not right that if you marry a woman and she's 120 pounds, and a few years later she's 220 pounds, right, and she's this big around, that's not right, right? That is just not right. That is not fair to a husband, and that shouldn't be done. And same way with men. It's not nearly as important to women, but you know, if you kept yourself up half decent, you looked half decent, and then after you get married, you're just a slob and a pig, and you look like a dope. Well, that's not right either, right? You shouldn't do that. You should try to, you know, give your wife what she expected she was going to get whenever she said, "I do." He continues here, page 62. He says, "Every husband and wife need to sit down and meditate on this thought. My partner married me because she or he thought the pleasing things I was doing during our courtship would continue for the rest of our lives. Am I holding up my end of this bargain?" And I think we all ought to ask ourselves that. Am I holding up my end of the bargain? Am I doing the things that my spouse thought that I would continue to do when we were dating? Now, for some of you, that's been like eons ago. You may not even remember when you were dating. It was so long ago, right? But for other ones of us, it's been not as long. I'm not singling out any particular people in here that have been married a long time, right? I'm just, you know, just saying hypothetically, there could be people that have been married a long time and wouldn't remember what dating was really like. But anyway, for some of us, it hasn't been that long ago. And then one more quote. The man who takes time to talk to a woman will have an inside track to her heart. I think that's true. I think that's very true. And for my wife, if you take time to buy her food, you'll have an inside track to her heart too. Because the way to my wife's heart is through her stomach. She loves food. She's a foodie. So here's what Harley recommends, and I think this makes a lot of sense. Choose to pursue common interests that will draw you together and make conversation natural. And you can think about it kind of like concentric circles, where you have circles that overlap each other, and you have your interests and her interests or his interests, and where those interests overlap, where the circles overlap, you both like doing those things. So choose to do, for the most part, things that you both like to do, and do less of the things that only you like to do or only she likes to do. I'm not saying that you can't ever do anything that only you like to do, right? Because it's, you know, you are an individual, you are a person, and it wouldn't make sense to just renounce everything you're interested in that your wife or husband doesn't like. But you all do want to try to focus on the things where you overlap, and that's what he talks about here. I will quote from him again. This is page 67. He says, "I have my sphere of interests and my spouse has hers. If these do not overlap, we can grow farther and farther apart. Because there are only so many hours in a day and week, I have to choose. I can pursue interests that we share, or I can pursue interests that we do not share. If I do the latter, we will grow apart. If I do the former, we will grow together. As I gain interests that my spouse's interests as I gain interests that are my spouse's interests, we have much more to talk about. Conversation becomes easier and more interesting. I can meet her need for conversation with less and less effort. It becomes natural and spontaneous." And this just makes good sense. If there are things that you both like doing and you both spend time doing those things together, then you have something to talk about, right? But if you love watching football and she hates watching football and you spend a lot of time watching football and she has no interest in football whatsoever, you can't talk about football, right? That's just one example. There could be any number of things. So try to find those things that overlap, and then that makes conversation easier. He says, "A marriage that sees husband and wife holding widely divergent interests may survive, but I have seen few that flourish under such circumstances." And like I said, this guy, he knows a heck of a lot more than I do. He's a marriage counselor, and he's, I don't know how old he was at this time, but I got the impression that he'd been doing this for a long time, talked with hundreds and thousands of couples, so he's seen a lot, and he knows what he's talking about, and that's why I liked quoting him, because I don't necessarily know all this stuff myself. I'm just going on what he says. But it makes sense, right? I'm sure lots of marriages, especially back in the day, right? Our brother Bud used to say that then in his day when he was growing up, the saying was, you marry them, you bury them, right? You just stick, it doesn't matter. You miserable or not, you stick with them no matter what. That's how people used to do it. And those marriages, they lasted, right? But they might not have been happy. They could have been happy. I think just about any marriage, I think it can be happy. If you have two people willing to work at it, any marriage can be happy. But it takes work. Do I have a witness? Anybody? Yeah. It takes work. It takes a lot of work. It's really, I think it's probably one of the hardest things ever. Now, I haven't had kids. Maybe you tell me having kids is even harder. Probably is. But marriage is at least number two. I can pretty well guarantee you that. It's hard. It's hard work, especially if you're married to somebody like me. That is really hard work. You can talk to my wife about that. She can tell you it's hard work. So here's some tips for maintaining good conversation. He says, financial considerations should not interfere with time for conversation. If you don't have the time to be alone to talk, your priorities are not arranged correctly. Right? That means that you're working too much or spending too much time outside the house or something where your financial considerations make it where you just can't spend quality time together. So something, you know, you need to rearrange some things. You need to make some changes. And I've been, you know, on this front, I've been trying to make some changes too. I've told some of you that I've kind of have a new way of going about things, a new routine that I've been doing, and based on some things that the CEO of Pinpoint's been teaching. And I really like it. And there's a whole bunch of steps to it, and I kind of spend about a half an hour in the morning doing this before I get started on my day. But one of the things that I really like doing is writing out all of my tasks for the next day. So Monday morning, I start writing out my tasks for Tuesday. And by the time I'm done Monday afternoon, evening, all of my tasks for Tuesday are written down. So when I sit down at my desk Tuesday morning, I've got everything that I need to do laid out right there before me. That helps a lot. I can get a lot more done that way. Because when you have the task written out and you really want to get them done, you really want to get them crossed off, you spend a lot less time goofing around because you know you got stuff to do, right? And then the other thing is, sometimes I think I just have to work like crazy and just put in so many hours, and if I'm not putting in 60 hours a week, then I'm not doing enough or something. And I'm thinking now, you know what, if I can be more efficient and not work quite so much, that'd be a lot better for me. So now one of my tasks is going to be stop at 5:30. That's one of my tasks. Get done at 5:30. Stop getting done at 6 or 6:30. Get done at 5:30. And if I can get done at 5:30, then you know what my next task is going to be? Get done at 5. Right? See if I can accomplish everything I need to do earlier. And that gives me more time with my wife. It gives me more time to unwind before I spend time with my wife so my mind's not racing. Right? So that's just one thing that I'm trying to do. I have one of the demotivational posters in my office, and it's got a picture of a bunch of nails that are bent over and not hammered in correctly. And it says that if you think that you can compensate for a lack of competence with extra effort, there's no limit to the things that you cannot accomplish, or something. And I thought that's true. You don't have to spend, you know, unless you really have to, but you don't have to spend inordinate amount of time working if you are efficient at what you're doing. And just because you're putting in crazy amounts of hours doesn't necessarily mean you're getting crazy amounts of things done. So anyway, where was I? Oh, okay. So down here, this is number 10 that he says, develop interests in each other's favorite topics of conversation. So if your wife is interested in gardening, then develop an interest in gardening and just start asking her questions about gardening. Or if she likes knitting or crocheting, or if she likes sewing, or what other things do women like? Whatever other things women like to do. Languages. My wife loves food, cooking, right? She loves that kind of stuff. Develop an interest in that. When you sit down to eat, if she loves cooking, just say, "Wow, this is really good. What's in it? How did you make that? You know, what are the ingredients and how'd you do that?" She'll like that. "How'd that make you feel whenever you added that cayenne pepper in there?" You know, whatever. I'm, you know, kind of kidding. But learn to balance your conversation. Avoid interrupting each other and try to give each other the same amount of time to talk. That goes back to what Austin was telling us last Sunday. Don't interrupt and give each other, you know, the same amount of time to talk. And then he says to use your conversation to inform, investigate, and understand each other. And I think that's probably a pretty good rule of thumb. Inform, but you don't only want to inform. You want to investigate. You want to try to understand what she's interested in. You know, dig down in there and then understand. The time that you put into learning how to communicate with your wife will pay dividends in your marriage, I do believe. And here's another thing that I thought about that I wanted to add in here. Husbands, you want to make sure that you listen to your wife's concerns and her problems, right? If she has concerns or worries or problems or something like that, you want to make sure you listen to those things. You want to make sure that she feels like she can talk to you about anything. Because this is something with my wife and I, we're very open. And she, as far as I know, I mean, there's nothing, if something's bothering her, she'll tell me about it, right? And she should. And if she doesn't like what I did or something like that, then tell me about it, right? Women should be free to express their opinions and their concerns openly. Now, of course, wives are supposed to submit to their husbands. So that doesn't mean that every time the wife tells her husband, "Hey, I don't like this," or "I think we should do this," or "I think we should do that," that doesn't mean the husband has to say, "Yes, ma'am, your wish is my command." I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that the husband should be open to hearing what his wife has to say. You remember Abraham and Sarah? Remember Sarah said, "Cast out the bondwoman and her son." And you know what God said? "Listen to Sarah. She's right." She was right about that. So a wise husband will do that. But a wife should never be afraid to bring up concern to her husband. And you know, if in your marriage there are things where you feel like are just, you can't talk about, right? Whether it's finances or whether it's whatever, You know, there's some people, they just think that I just can't talk about this, so it's uncomfortable or whatever. I don't think that should be. I don't think there's anything in your marriage that you should feel like, I just can't talk to my spouse about this. You should be able to talk to your spouse about anything. If you can't talk to them about it, who can you talk to about it, right? That's the way that I see it anyway. So if wives are worried about something, they ought to talk to their husband about it. And there's no reason for a woman to suffer in silence. And I think some women will do this. They'll suffer silently, and something's just, you know, they just can't stand. Maybe their husband just does something that just irritates them to death, right? But they just never say anything. And you know what? Maybe he doesn't even know that he's doing something that's irritating you. It could very well be. A lot of times we don't know that we're irritating somebody else. So, I'll tell you one thing. If my wife is doing something that irritates me, she hears about it, right? I tell her about it right away. I'm very open with her. And she does the same thing to me. So you don't ever want to suffer silently. And if you're worried about something, talk to him about it. And husbands, you don't want to, well, I'm kind of getting into the next section here, but you don't want to keep things from your wives. This is just, I'll just say this and then I'll elaborate on it. You don't want to keep things from your wives because you're trying to protect her from something. You know, maybe your finances are a mess or something like that. You just don't want to tell her. And then all of a sudden one day the car gets repoed or something. Bad idea. You know, you want to tell your wife about all this stuff and then you can work at it together. Anyway, okay, let's get to the next one. Do we have enough time for the next one? How long have I been? Oh, man. It's already been an hour. You know what? I'm just going to quit here. I think I thought I might get through three. I was hoping to get through five. I only got through two. But it's been an hour. I'm just going to quit here. And we'll pick up with honesty and openness next time. And then we'll look at financial support, the fourth need of a woman. And then we'll look at family commitment, which is the fifth need. And then we'll get into the men's needs. So that took longer than I thought, but that's okay. I think this is worthwhile, and I hope it's been edifying for you. And I hope this will help us all to be better spouses, myself included.